Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends. And Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode 43. Episode 43 is all about the European trip that I've just come back from. So, there's not going to be any major feature, there's not an interview or Heritage or Tech Talk or anything in this episode. It is literally just me reflecting on the massive trip that I've just got back from, all the experiences, the highs, the lows, and there were some lows, and everything else. So let's get into that then. So first thing I want to say is big thank you to Nathan, who's been on the podcast and YouTube channel before, and joined me halfway through, and also thanks to B-Roll Rog and Joe. So let me introduce those people properly first. So Joe, I've known for 25 years. He's a good mate of mine. We, if you listened to that episode from last week, that is Joe. So that's the guy that, you know, when I was kicking this idea around about doing a second road trip after last year's road trip, I reached out to and said, pretty cool, given that we don't live near each other anymore, and the fact that, you know, he's got a family and kids and all the rest of it, it's quite difficult to get connected and actually spend some time together. But last year's road trip being completely solo, I did want to do something with people this year. So Joe said yes, definitely. He had been planning to go with his dad, Roger, B-Roll Rog, who, and I'll explain that in a sec. So yeah, they've been planning to do some sort of bike road trip on their motorbikes. Roger's got a Harley, Joe also has a Harley, and yeah, they've been planning to go off and do that stuff. So they altered that to come on this trip with me, and I'm hugely thankful. So thank you to Joe and Roger for that. Now, if I start thinking about the trip itself, cut this bit and go back to the thank you. So on the B-roll Rog comment, that guy, right, he's 70 years old. You wouldn't think to look at him. He looks like a cross between sort of British Willie Nelson, really. And he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. He apologized way too much. You know, he didn't need to apologize at all. I was grateful for everything he was doing. But so when you watch the video, and it's not coming out today or anything, it's going to be in a little while before that comes out on the YouTube channel, @Rengineering on YouTube, by the way. All the footage that from the first half of that episode, that is kind of us walking away, or the, you know, the lovely bits of B-roll that you'll see that of us enjoying ourselves, he was like running ahead, going, cool, I'll stand on this corner and watch you drive by, hanging out at the side of the car, you know, you name it, he was doing all of that. So, you know, for a 70-year-old guy to be the MVP, and if anything, he was, like I said, slightly apologetic around the fact that, is it okay if I do this? Do you mind if I, like, dude, knock yourself out? You know, so one of the things I got comments from about last year is that there wasn't enough exterior footage of the car, and there wasn't enough interaction between me and other people. Well, there's not when you're on your own. It's very difficult to shoot exterior shots unless you put the camera on the side of the road, and then drive past it and then go back and get it again. It ends up taking forever to do those sorts of shots. Important, yes, but difficult also. So yeah, another big thank you to Roger for that. Let's get into the actual trip. So day 00, I posted all of this on Instagram, by the way, so you can go back and have a look at some of the Instagram posts if you want to get the sort of the images to go with the trip. But I broke it into literally day 00, so the, you know, prior, the night before actually heading out on the trip, and then sequentially onwards from there. @Rengineering UK, by the way, on Instagram, and @Rengineering everywhere else. So yeah, the day before, we knew that the channel crossing or channel tunnel crossing, the Euro tunnel was going to be an early-ish start. One of the things I learned from last year is the fact that I left it too late, and it ended up being like a 2 o'clock crossing, I think it was, which by the time I got into France, where did I get to last year? It was a brutally long trip, and I ended up getting there at 10 o'clock at night, and then obviously at that point nothing's open in terms of restaurants, because I think it was a Sunday I left last time. So yeah, it was tricky. So I learned from that. It's better to leave early in the morning and try and get a chunk of the driving done. I was probably went too far the other way this time. We could have left a little bit later because we weren't doing such a big stint. Now last year the first day was 9.5 hours driving, and then the second day was 10 hours driving. So that got me from the UK, the sort of south of the UK, all the way down to Monaco. Didn't need to do anything like that. We were going to Belgium, which is actually, I think it was about 3 and a bit hours drive once we got across to Calais. So yeah, I mean, we were by mid-afternoon, we were already in Bastogne, which gave us a bit of time in the afternoon to go and do stuff as well, rather than just turn up, grab food and go to bed. What I would say is, in terms of timing, this whole trip has probably been about a week or 2 weeks too early, I would say. It was still cold out there in Belgium. It was, I think, 3 or 4 degrees. And almost all of the tourist areas were closed. It's just too early in the season. Having said that, I'll come on to the reason why it's not such a bad idea after all a bit later in the episode. So yeah, arrived in Belgium, arrived in Bastogne, and parked up, checked into Joe's hotel and Joe and Roger's hotel, because they stayed at a little, right in the Bastogne town centre. There's a sort of, I guess, the equivalent of a Walmart or a Tesco's Express or something like that. And above that, it had quite a meat and potatoes, I wouldn't even say it's like a Travelodge or a Holiday Inn. It wasn't even like that. It was more of a sort of, yeah, I've not seen it before, a commercial truck stop, but actually really nice. The rooms, I was a bit like, oh, this isn't great, because this, you know, wasn't even inside the room. The corridors, as you walk along the corridor towards the bedrooms, was kind of a sheltered exterior. But they were great inside, really nice. So and they were obviously right in the center of the town. What I wanted to do is be further out, because there was a blend of two things with this whole trip. One was World War II, and the other was, and particularly Band of Brothers, because I'm a massive fan of the miniseries. The other obviously was Porsche, the brand, the cars, everything that you've heard on the intro. So yeah, so I had booked an Airbnb a bit further out of town. But before we did any of that, because we got there in the afternoon, we immediately started thinking, well, how should we use the rest of the afternoon? Because we're here now, so it seems crazy to start tomorrow if we got some time today. It also, by doing that, meant that the next day we could get up, wrap any last bits up, and head on to the Nürburgring, or the Nürburgring area, and I don't know. So we went to the Bastogne War Museum. I hadn't done really any research. I'm particularly bad at doing research. I like to stumble around with my arms out, my eyes closed, figuring things out as I go. It feels like more of an adventure to me rather than having a really hardened itinerary. And I'll come at the end. We'll start summarizing about why I think that's the most important thing with this. So yeah, so we went to the Bastogne War Museum. It was brilliant. Again, there's shots of this all in the Instagram page. And yeah, it was just really fascinating, great, huge memorial that was there. And I completely underestimated the size of that place. So that kind of set the tone, really. We were all a bit, not fatigued, but, you know, you've driven for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, whatever it was, including the part before, to get to Folkestone. And yeah, we were just a bit woolly, I think. But enjoyed it, really enjoyed it, and then managed to find one restaurant that was open, and luckily it was a really good restaurant, so we had some nice food. And then after that, shot back to their hotel, and I went off to my Airbnb. Now my Airbnb, what I typically do with that, and this is probably a pretty good travel tip, is when you're scanning around, scan around and then pick Superhost, and then use the filtering system to filter out, particularly from a road trip, parking. I always search all of the reviews in case there's comments around whether the parking's good or bad. It didn't end up being accurate, as we'll tell you about later. But the actual Airbnb was amazing, absolutely amazing. I had the, you know, it was a converted World War II bakery, or pre-war bakery, that they'd renovated and turned into an Airbnb. It was lovely. There were still frag holes and kind of chipped bits of masonry on the back of the actual Airbnb itself. It was such a cool place. And it was one of two buildings that was left standing after the Battle of the Bulge. So, yeah, amazing. It really felt like you were in history when you were there. So, loved it. Got up in the morning, caught up with Rog and Joe, and then we jumped on, at this point, we were still faffing around with whichever was the best or most preferred sat-nav to use. I find Waze great in the UK. I use it all the time in the UK, and absolutely useless in France, Belgium, Germany, and the rest of Europe. I don't know why, but I find Google Maps so much more reliable. It locks satellites really quickly, and it's just really, really useful. So that's what I used, and then we headed off to the Adenau region. Now, that was brilliant, because that was only about 2.5 hours from where we were in Bastogne. So, or Bastogne. So, felt pretty fresh then as well. We were in the Adenau region at lunch on the first day of being there, which, I guess there's two things for me. There's a part that feels really, it builds the adventure by having a really big driving stint. You feel like you're seeing very different kind of places, but at the same time, the purpose of this trip was slightly different. What I didn't want to do is spend tons of time on the road and then not see my friends because it's so much traveling time, right? So this sort of condensed version worked really well. Got to Adenau. Again, like I said, really early in the season, nothing was really open. Pinocchio, again, these places, if you've been to the Nürburgring before, they'll be familiar to you. But, you know, everybody wants to go to Hotel Am Tiergarten to go to Piston Klaus or Pinocchio. They're the two kind of main eateries, that are the ones that are really well known. Neither of them were open at that particular point. Luckily, they opened a couple of days later, but it was tricky. So we did a bit of a recce, had spent some time, managed to get some food for that night, and then bedded down in the GT3 Das Sportliche Hotel, which, again, if I was to review that place, I'd give it, you know, a 8 or 9. It was really, really well set up. Big lounge with a giant 81-inch screen or 90-inch screen, whatever it was, that had a HDMI cable just hanging off the bottom of it, so you could plug in your laptops and just rewatch your laps, which we did. We did that a couple of nights on the trot. First day at the ring, so we managed to get there up to the Nordschleife for opening, which was 5:30 till 7:30, I think, a couple of hours. It was heaving. It just opened, and both Joe and I went on track and did the first lap of the Nordschleife within the first 15 minutes of it opening. Absolute carnage. Everyone's adrenaline is up at that point. Everyone's itching to get on the track. It was a beautiful, sunny, clear skies day. The track temperature hadn't dipped that low, so there was no fear of ice. There was no rain the previous day. So you couldn't have kind of organized that any better, really, if you could have tried. So, but what we found, we came off track, we finished the lap, and I've recorded the lap, by the way, so you can see that. Parts of it will be on the YouTube channel. I'm not sure anyone wants to watch a really slow lap of me driving around the Nürburgring. There are much better people to watch that. Misha Chowdhury, for example. But I really enjoyed it, loved it, shook the cobwebs out. There is an element of taking your car into your own hands. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while or watching the YouTube channel, the episodes or anything else, you'll know by now that I'm incredibly precious about my car. I was less nervous about going on the Nürburgring to drive it and more nervous about, well, what if I damage the car? Because I do want to keep this car for life. I've invested time, blood, energy, money, you name it, into that car. It's really important that I hang on to it and keep it as nice as I can. Not to not drive it, but just not damage it. And there's always that risk with a Nürburgring. Even if you are the best driver in the world, the person next to you might not be. You know, if they don't drive in an intuitive way and just, you know, use all of the track and make sure you kind of overtake in the right places. But there isn't really, there's no governance there. It's just free for all. So, and I had a couple of those. So, yeah, we lapped the Nürburgring, lapped the Nordschleife, came back off, parked up, had a bit of a chat. And then I don't know where it was, whether we Googled it, whether we bumped into somebody, but somehow we figured out that the GP circuit, so the Formula One circuit, was also open. They open that once a week, and we had about 40 minutes left to be able to get over there, get some credit on the app, on the website. I mean, this, I'll explain why this is a pain in the ass anyway in a minute, and then get some time in on track. We were both dead up for this, you know, back to backing the Nordschleife and the GP circuit in one car. And you think about the ring stickers you can get, right? The ring stickers have got both the Nordschleife and the GP circuit attached. That's the little foot that sticks off a Nürburgring sticker. Well, I've always, you know, I've had them on my car before. You know, my Lotus had one on it because that had been around the Nürburgring. But really, like, if I'm being a awkward knobhead, then I would say that you should cut the little bit off with the GP circuit if you haven't been around the GP circuit. I wanted that. So, but it's really not easy to find the entrance. There's no really good signs. When I looked at it on the internet, it was very difficult. So we spent about 15-20 minutes faffing around trying to find out how to actually get to the GP circuit to get signed on. When we got there, because we did eventually manage to find it, we then found that it was really difficult to actually get credit on your account to then scan. We managed to do that within five minutes of the last stint. So the last available session for the day, and obviously in turn, because we weren't staying that long, the last session that we'd be able to do at all would be gone by the next time it ran. So we did it. I think there was 4 minutes left on the clock or 5 minutes left on the clock before the session opened and got everybody out. And then obviously once people are out, that's it. They lock it down and that's it for the day. So... And I would say that GP circuit session was one of the best things I've ever done in a car. It was absolutely brilliant. The sun was setting. And again, you can see some of these pictures on the on Instagram. There weren't that many cars on track. There were still idiots. You know, there's a guy that was in a E43 compact. And it had some hot engine in it because it was quick. That on the... sort of the last right-hand turn before you come onto the start-finish straight, overtook me. Credit, I'm not here to, you know, have no ego here. But he overtook me on the outside with two wheels in the kitty litter and two wheels on the rumble strips, basically. Yeah, it was just a stupid move. There must have been about 2 inches between us. I don't know why you couldn't have just waited the 2 seconds to be able to pick me up on the straight. That would have been fine. But apart from that, you know, there was no harm, no foul. There was no accident or anything like that. And yeah, spent the next sort of 15 minutes absolutely giving it death on the GP circuit. Now, I have done a track day before. I'm not a track guy. I don't. It's not something I love doing. My Outlaw Cayman, which is what its handle is on Instagram, by the way. If you want to go and have a look at some of those pictures at Outlaw Cayman. But I really, really enjoyed that particular experience. It was really heavy on brakes, really heavy on tyres, because it's a fast circuit and there's lots of heavy braking, especially start-finish straight into a hairpin. But a great experience. Parked up afterwards, had a good old chat, sun was setting, and headed back. That was day one. You know, that was, if you think about what we were doing, that was like leaving Bastogne, driving through the Eifel Mountains, and then coming into the ring, getting settled into the hotel, and then going and doing all of that. It was almost like, where do you go from here? You know, how do you beat this? So sadly, day two, one thing you always have to remember with that region is it can be raining in one part of the circuit and bone dry in another. We had it all the following day. So we had sleet, snow, sun, rain, everything. But it pretty much wiped out the day. So we had some nice driving around. We went a bit, did some exploring, but it was a bit of more of a come down day, I would say, as opposed to the previous day, which was pretty intense. But the great bit about the GT3 hotel is the fact that you've got that lounge. So I spent some time pulling content off and, you know, doing some admin for the YouTube channel. And then we sat back and grabbed some beers and, yeah, watched our laps on that big screen, which is great. Following day, that's the point where Joe and Rog decided they were going to head off. They were going to Ypres to do some World War One stuff. And this is where the following morning where Nathan arrived. Now, Nathan pulled a late stint. I don't think he left the UK until mid-afternoon. So whereas I was talking about, you know, you leave later in the day and then obviously it becomes a mission. Well, he didn't arrive at the GT3 hotel until gone 11 that night. Credit to him, though. He was up in the morning. We had a lovely breakfast together and it was almost like a ship's passing, though, because it was a brief conversation between Joe, Rog and Nathan. And then they went their separate ways and then Nathan joined me. That day was another beautiful day. Nathan and I thought we were going to try and cram some stuff in because it was the last day before we started to leave the Nürburgring. But what we wanted to do is spend some time with Gold Leaf Performance. So Gold Leaf, amazing guys. If you haven't been over to their Instagram account, you can do that, Gold Leaf at Gold Leaf Performance. What they've generated or created is a GT4 RS carbon fiber intake system. Now, I didn't know this at the time because I was considering going out and buying the parts from a 4RS and retrofitting that to my car as part of the kind of whole outlaw theme. But it's really, really expensive to do for starters. The other thing is it doesn't fit. It does not fit. The intake system on a GT4 RS is top down. And for all other Caymans in the sort of 981718, they are sort of facing the back, so facing the back of the car. So they're obviously not compatible, and it would have been an absolute nightmare to try and create something. Could have been done, but it would have been a lot of R&D. Well, they've actually spent some time doing all that R&D, and we shot a tech talk with them on that build process and everything they're doing, all their plans for the future. So that will be coming out sooner than the episode actually on the trip. But after that, we wrapped with those guys. We went out for a drive. They were meeting Misha at the ring to do a lap. You can see that lap on Misha's YouTube channel now. And I think he said that it was a little loud for him, so he had his race earplugs in. Whereas I had been out on the road with it and I thought it was fantastic. It's, you get a deep V8 grumble when you're kind of at low revs, you get this bark when you're kind of accelerating, and then when you come off gas you get this kind of almost like forced induction gurgle. I mean, you get every cool noise from a car that you can design, you get all of that. It's a freaking brilliant system. It isn't cheap. It's not meant to be cheap because it's taken a ton of R&D. All this stuff's handmade to the best quality. I'm very critical of things being classed as OEM or OEM plus because that's a tall order to get it to that standard. But I would say that they've met that easily. So yeah, you can see more of their stuff either on their Instagram page or over on Misha's video. After that, we still had some time left. It was early afternoon. We grabbed some lunch and then we headed off to the Michael Schumacher Museum in Cologne. This is where it's really cool because I have an outline for a plan when I do these things, or the last year and this year I have. It drives my wife absolutely nuts that I do this, but that's what I do because she's way more planned. Nathan was saying, like, I'd really love to go and do that. And because we didn't have this hardened plan about where we want to be at particular times, it's like, yeah, absolutely fine. No problem. Let's go. So we jumped in the car in Nathan's turboed MX-5, got on the road and got down to Cologne to go to the Michael Schumacher Museum. Absolutely brilliant. Hey, I hope you're really enjoying this episode. And if you are enjoying this episode, I have a very small request to make. I'm really trying to grow the YouTube channel at the moment, and whilst it's always nice when people naturally gravitate towards it, subscribe and like and share, I'm going to actually ask you, if you're enjoying this episode and you've enjoyed the Rengineering podcast so far, to head over to YouTube and subscribe, and let me know what you think of any of those episodes and if there's anything you'd like to see in the future. But for now, I'll head back to the episode, but just that small request. Thanks. got to the Michael Schumacher Museum, had a great look around there. It was really interesting. Again, loads of photos on the Instagram page. Loved it. And I love the sort of randomness of jumping in a car. Cologne's about 35 minutes from the Nürburgring. So, it was really good. Maybe it's a bit more, actually. We had some traffic, so maybe it took an hour. And then by the time we got back, the intention was to get an onboard with the GT4 RS intake from Goldie Performance, but we were just really pushing it to try and get back in time for that. So we didn't make that. But like I said, Misha was recording it anyway, so you can see all that on there on his YouTube channel. We did make it back, though, for the lap session, and with the previous day being drenched and not usable for some people were going out, but there's no way I was going to go out. This again was that perfect blue sky, lovely track, and had the good sense to leave it a good probably hour and a half after track opening to go out. Perfect. Nathan shot off first. I gave it about 5 or 6 minutes, I think, while I was faffing around setting up cameras and stuff to record it. Then went out afterwards. Little bit of traffic at the start of the lap, but I reckon from about a third of the way in, I had almost half of the Nordschleife to myself. Now, on a tourist fun day. So, if you've known anything about the Nürburgring, it is hectic. It's busy all the time. There are no quiet times. So the fact that on the last day, I managed to find, a window of time with perfect track temperature, perfect weather, and got a lap in, and my confidence level had grown massively, because the previous day I won't lie, I was a little nervous about going out on track, and this time round I felt totally different, and I am quite proud of this, because it showed a little bit of commitment at least, that coming out of carousel, so my pitch entry into carousel was perfect. I've done hundreds of laps on GT7 on this, so not that I know the Nürburgring, but I'm aware of entry points and exit points for most turns, I would say. Not all, but most. And nailed it. Absolutely nailed my entry into carousel and nailed the exit and pinned the throttle. And I could feel, I felt a lightness and I saw the traction light going off. And there was a little bit of, I think I even said it actually on the recording. I was like, Catbird! The fact that I'd actually exited carousel with full commitment, and the pictures, obviously there's still race photographers all over the Nordschleife, so there's lots of those photos. I had hoped that someone would have got a rear shot of the car coming out of carousel, so I could see if I cocked a wheel. I don't think I did, but it would have been really cool to see that. Anyway, there's some really good photos. I'm going to buy a couple. The last time I went to the Nordschleife, I ordered a print that went onto it's probably A1 size, I think. But then it printed onto this aluminium backing, basically. So you get this like shimmeriness. It's brilliant. It looks really cool. Going to do the same again with this. So I've got the Lotus and the Porsche. And obviously, if you think about the REM 550, that is a combination of the two, right? The Lotus chassis and the Porsche brand. So it all works in my head. Love it. Finish that lap. Nathan and I went off to Pinocchio, because Pinocchio had opened by that point. Oh, the thing I would say about the previous day as well, we did get to go to a Piston Klaus, because that had opened for the first time that day. So things have started to open up through that trip. That was it, pretty much. We went back, had a nice meal at Pinocchio, headed back to the GT3 hotel, got our heads down, and woke up the next day to head off to Stuttgart. That was the next stop. That was a good 3.5 hours, I would say, to get to Stuttgart. It was brilliant. Loved the museum. Again, shot loads of footage for the museum. Nathan humoured me quite a bit, asking him to take thumbnail pictures. But blessing me, did do that. Really enjoyed it. I shot some little bit of content around the 550 that they have there. Really recommend it. It's food was really good in the restaurant. Probably took about 2 hours, I would say, to get around the museum itself. Totally recommend it. Now, here's where it gets interesting. My car, as I talked about lots of times, the intent with my car is OEM Plus, exclusive manufacturer, Sonderwunsch. It's the, what if you can lift the lid on PTS and just all on that kind of customization the Porsche offer, is what can I do with a car for that? So rather than, because I originally wanted to take my car back to one of the factories and just kind of get an image of my car looking like it's leaving the factory, that sort of thing. But it ended up being quite difficult to find that. So what I did find, though, is this Sonderwunsch showroom, which is behind the museum. It's 2 minutes away from the museum. So I drove around the back of the Sonderwunsch showroom, parked up, popped up the, I was traveling pretty light, so it was a GoPro and a little really light tripod, and started shooting some content. And then within seconds, and I mean within 30 seconds, two or three security guards came immediately out and told me I couldn't shoot there. I did manage to capture some of that, so I'm going to leave that in for the episode, just so you can see the comedy value of that, me getting told off and told to pack my stuff up, which I did. I duly did. But it was still cool to get some shots. That was the intention of it. Okay, well, we've had a nice time at Stuttgart. Let's head off to, Nathan had booked a hotel and I booked another Airbnb in Alsace. But as he headed off, I needed to get some fuel. I headed round to the nearest fuel station, which is about a kilometre, I guess, from the Porsche Museum, parked up, and then got out of the car, and some random guy who I didn't know who he was, that was in a Panamera hybrid thing, wandered over and said hello. Now, people are very polite in Germany. I really have a massive amount of time for Germany. Hello, any German fans out there, lovely to, if you ever see me around, come and say hello. But this is the really, really, really weird thing. As I was getting told off outside the back of Sonderwunsch, a car drove past. Turns out it was this car, this Panamera hybrid. Well, the guy that decided to come and say hello is also a guy that had been working for Porsche since 1989 and is like the head or the director of Sonderwunsch, Grant Larson. Now, when he said that, I was like, no way, that's so cool. Lovely to meet you. Then he turned around and said, oh, and by the way, did you see the Boxster concept in the museum? Yes, of course I did. It's amazing. I love that car. I think it's brilliant. And in fact, there's a conversation your Porsche story I did with Danny from Danny's Timeless Classics about five or six episodes back, maybe a few more. And we talk about the fact that the original launch colour for the 906 is terracotta interior on silver. Well, obviously, this is that. So the very much in the same frame of mind with this. So it turns out that Grant then tells me that he is the designer for that Boxster concept, which completely blew my mind, that the randomness and the serendipity of a guy out of nowhere coming over and saying hello, and it ended up being the guy that designed the Boxster. Now, my brain's whirring about a million miles an hour at this point, and I turn around and say to him, you realize my car wouldn't even exist without you. And he was sort of furrowed eyebrow for a second, didn't really quite understand what I was trying to tell him. I explained, well, if he hadn't designed a Boxster concept, then there would be no 987. And if the 987 hadn't been designed, there would be no Cayman. And if there was no 987 Cayman, there would be no 981 Cayman, and therefore no, my car wouldn't exist. And the GT4 wouldn't exist. And the GT4 RS wouldn't exist. So the origin story of him doing that piece of work is foundational, basically, for the model of Porsche that I love so much. So huge deal for me to meet that guy. Really enjoyed it. He then looked down at my car and said, your wheels, I designed those too. And they're basically Cayman R wheels that's the wheel that he designed for the Cayman R. And then they used it for the Boxster Spider, but in a 20-inch, the Cayman R was a 19-inch. And obviously use it on the the GTS 4-litre as well. So, super cool. You couldn't plan for that. Those things do seem to happen to me very oddly. We got on like a house on fire, Grant and I got on really well. He then turned around to me and said, are you around for a bit? Would you like to get me to show you around? I mean, this is getting better and better by the moment. Unfortunately not, because we knew we needed to leave for Alsace, or I was leaving for Alsace just after that. But he did give me his business card and said, let me know, come back, and I'll show you around. Well, I didn't waste any time. I emailed him, I think, the day after that. He got back to me today saying he's going to speak to the Porsche press office. and see if we can organise something. There's no guarantees, obviously, because it's down to the press office who they invite. But I'd love to shoot a heritage episode with him, learn all about his backstory. And again, like lots of people, he asked me whether I'd looked at his previous interviews or anything he's done. No, the answer is always no. I like things to feel completely fresh. I don't want to either avoid asking questions because they've been asked before. I do things in my way, and I just like having open conversations. And I know that you guys like that as well, because you've told me enough. So the ones that really work, the Frank Cassidy episode always comes up as a good example of that, where it's just two people, you know, theoretically, or this is the vision from me, is sat in a pub having a conversation, and you, the audience, are that third person. That's how these should feel. So no, I never do any research on people. If I do my job properly, it still feels great. So we'll wait and see what happens with Portia. It's obviously a huge moment for me and the channel and the podcast, being able to go there and speak to them. I can't offer them the same, you know, the brand value for Rengineering is relatively small, still growing. Top 20 podcast in the UK automotive chart. It's been high in charts, and I think it's hit 4 or 5 in Denmark before and places like that. So, but yeah, it still doesn't have the power. I can't offer them any money or anything like that. This is just about, you know, being passionate about the brand. And that's what I've asked them to consider, is the fact that this is somebody that's genuinely passionate. So let's see, right? I will update you in due course on that. So leaving Stuttgart then, headed to Alsace. Again, another cracking Airbnb. I got really lucky with that one as well. The Alsace region is beautiful, so it was a joy to drive into there. But I was pretty tired at the end of that day, because I think that was a 6.5-hour driving day. That's one of the bigger ones, because we're starting to come back across the country now. Yeah, enjoyed that. Got up in the morning, and then that next stop, met up with Nathan, and then we headed to Rance. I'm going to keep pronouncing it Rance, not Reims. And brilliant. Bump into a couple of people there. Everyone's so friendly. Now, if you know from last year's episode, my Porsche story that's on YouTube right now, you'll see that you can get some great photos. What was really cool, though, is that it wasn't open. Rance wasn't open at that point, but someone had left the back gate open, so you could drive into the actual sort of behind the pit area. So I've got some even better shots, so you'll see those as well. You can see a couple of those on Instagram right now. I posted one on at Outlaw Cayman, that Instagram page, but you'll see loads more when I put the episode out. That was the halfway point. We grabbed some lunch nearby in Rance, got some extra photos. We didn't stay there anywhere near as long as I did last time. Last year I stayed there for a good day and a half. I'm not kidding. I spent a day and a half walking around that place with my mouth open because I loved it so much. I think we were probably there about 40 minutes, something like that. And I think Nathan at that point was, he'd seen enough. It was interesting. He's a Formula One engineer, Formula One mechanic, sorry. But yeah, he'd kind of got what he needed quite quickly. I think on reflection, that's the balance that's different, is that you have to pay attention to what somebody else is interested in and what their preferences are, because you can't just suit yourself the whole time. So this is where the balance between going on solo road trips are and going with people. It's just some fairness in there. So that was only a halfway split, though. So that next driving day, this one we're talking about now, Alsace to Rance, and then Rance to Rouen. That is again another 6.5-hour driving day. So we left Rance, headed off down to Rouen, and I don't know if you can hear my wife in the background making dinner, but she is. So got to Rouen, parked up in this horrible little underground car park, good hotel, Radisson Blu, but yeah, awful car park underneath the hotel. And that was pretty much it. We had a bit of a chill that evening, caught up. We had a nice little walk round and grabbed some food together, Nathan and I, and then the next day it was getting up and shooting off. And so Nathan pretty much had a little walk around Rouen in the morning and then headed back to the Eurotunnel, and I had one last stop, and that last stop was Rouen F1 circuit. Now Rouen F1 circuit doesn't exist anymore. That I think got demolished in 1994, from what I remember, from doing the little bit of research I did do. But it was the first and only factory win for Porsche Formula One with Dan Gurney at the wheel, I wanted to go and see if we could find any of that circuit. Now, when you do your research, it basically says there is nothing left. That's not strictly true. There's a hairpin on that circuit in Rouen that is the absolute same part of the circuit as it was originally. You can see the higher mounted curbs, you can see the paint on the curbs. The actual circuit itself you can't really drive, but there's Six Frères, I think it is the, basically it's like a sequence of switchbacks, not even full switchbacks really, they're sort of swoopers that come down a hill, and then you come into this hairpin and you would have done a right hand turn around the hairpin and gone off around the rest of the circuit. That Six Frères section used to be called Chicken Lift, because Formula One drivers used to say that, and we're talking Fangio and Hill and those, that era, that you could do it flat. Now, I don't reckon you could do that flat in a million years, but I guess if you were not driving on one side of the road and you were trying to pick the straightest line through, or you may have been able to. But it was really cool. I managed to get a shot of my car right next to all of that with that as a backdrop. So Porsche's only Formula One win with my car as a backdrop on that hairpin. And at that point, it was time for me to leave and head to Eurotunnel as well. Now, let's talk about the good and the bad. The good, loved being on the road. That sense of adventure you get from it, that opportunity to go out. I don't think I noticed I was feeling stressed particularly before I left, but I definitely had some tension. And I shook that off pretty quickly by being on the road. Food was much better. If you watched last year's episode, then you would have seen that I ended up having two ham and cheese baguettes. That's all I ate all day. I improved on that, managed to get some nicer food. I think it was just a bit better organized and probably less nerve shredded from doing such a huge amount of driving. The Nürburgring itself, incredible. Bastogne, incredible. What we did do, and in fact I didn't mention this as I was talking about Bastogne, is the foxholes from that Battle of the Bulge. We went there, I flew the drone around, got some great cinematic footage from that bit as well. So and that was really important. It felt great to be there. It was very poignant. I also crashed the drone there, so my DJI Mini 3 Pro, that if you've seen that last year's episode, you'd have seen all those aerial shots. That's what was shot with a Mini 3 Pro, and I crashed it and broke the arm. So not great. But that's not the fault of anyone else, but pilot error. So that was just me making a mistake. And then obviously the actual ring itself, what can you say about it? It's everything you want it to be. If you're not in a kind of place where you can drive from your home to the Nürburgring, like Europeans are, still take the trip. You've got Rent for Ring, RSR, all sorts of companies out there that you can hire a car and still drive it, right? So it's not going to limit you. And if you're driving on the left, then you will find that an easy conversion because it's exactly the same as home. Obviously, in the UK, we don't. We're right-hand drive here. So, yeah, there's a little, to hire a car, it would feel a little bit awkward, but I would absolutely 100% say yes, go and do it. It's a petrolhead or gearhead's bucket list thing to do. Definitely put it on the list. Time of the year, though, it's a double-edged sword, right? The weather's unpredictable. The tourist stuff's not open if you go this early, so late April. At the same time, though, when else can you get half a track with no one else on it? It's basically unheard of. So it's a real gamble. You gamble with the weather when you go early, you know, or late in the season, because I guess it applies to both. But then when it does hook up and you get those perfect moments, you get a really perfect moment. Same with the GP circuit. I can imagine that that's really, really congested and difficult to get on, all with tons of people on it. So, yeah, loved it. I guess if I was to be critical, that's it. I think, you know, the Nürburgring is such a cool place to be. It's really just a case of picking the timing, you know, and that's just what your personal preference is. If you're more comfortable with the weather windows and stuff, then pick the early in late parts of the season. If you want to involve yourself in the hustle and bustle, the 1 mile long queues to get up onto the Nordschleife, then that's what you face during the summer months. I also reversed my car into a post. It wasn't even a post, it was a brick wall. And that makes it sound like it was a flat brick wall. It wasn't, it was the very edge. So when I was in Rouen in that Radisson Blu hotel, and I told you about the awful underground car park, there was a brick, one brick wide edge of a wall that, as I was reversing to try and get back out of that car park, I just didn't see. The car, I have reversing sensors on my car. They didn't pick it up. And before I know it, it was like 2 mile an hour reversing into this wall. And as I've said, right, I'm so precious about that bloody car that it hurt. I was absolutely fuming. And it was just before doing this Porsche Formula One sequence in Rouen circuit. So yeah, it was one of those things. And I was talking about, I think I mentioned it in the last episode or a couple of episodes ago, about the fact that I tried to drive my Lotus there, and I did do a lap in my Lotus, but the whole trip was a nightmare. And I personally, if I reflected on my attitude and my behavior then, wasn't great. I was so angry and frustrated about the fact that I hadn't had the trip I wanted, that I ruined my own trip by getting frustrated at the things that didn't work out. Well, this was almost, I had that ringing in my ears as I was thinking about the things that were happening, you know, the crashing the drone, or that second day where the weather was really poor and we couldn't go on circuit. And then this, reversing my car into to the edge of a wall, you know, it really tested my ability to see past that and actually think about, you know, it's the trip in its entirety. I can fix the bumper. It's not that bad. You know, it really isn't that bad. I can fix the drone. That isn't that bad. We got out on circuit and did, you know, I did two laps, not tons of laps, but two laps, and managed to drive on the Formula One circuit as well. When you put all those things into perspective, even if you have those moments where things don't work out, it's not about that. It's about the grand scheme of things, right? It's about the fact that the overall trip was amazing, and it was amazing. So I did handle it better. I was frustrated and upset about reversing the car, but I think it was more, as much as my pride was hurt, as much as the, you know, making a mistake, it was more about that. That's the thing I was frustrated at. But, you know, I got past it, still allowed myself to enjoy it. I took that moment to kind of reflect on the fact that it had happened, and then put it in perspective and moved on. And now, as I sit here talking about it, and I've kind of worked my way through, and this is the first time I've really done that reflection piece on the kind of whole trip itself and joined it all up, yeah, it was all worth it. And I had an amazing time, and I would definitely go back and do it again. I don't know whether I'll do the ring. I don't think I'll do the ring next year, possibly not even the year after that. I'll give it another 2 or 3 years. So that specialness, that kind of mystery around the place, if you feel that, right? You feel that when you're there. I don't want to go there so often that disappears. I have lots to do in the Alps. I'm meeting up with Frank Cassidy again at some point in the near future, and I want to talk more about the Alps, because he's done a lot more of the Swiss Alps. So yeah, that might be next year's event or next year's trip. I guess if I was to reflect on one of the things I mentioned on a bit earlier on as well, about going with people, going on your own, I'm happy with both. You know, it was a really, the starting of last year's episode was really poignant, and it was a real reflection for me about, you know, these things are tough to organise, right? You know, it's not for everybody going and doing a big Euro trip. Some people can't afford it. Some people can afford it, but don't have the time. Some people have got a car that's mid-build. You know, there's people I know that I wanted to bring on for Your Porsche Stories that they were really up for initially, and then had problems with their car and then felt they didn't want to do it. That's cool too, right? So you can't be upset or frustrated with people for not doing these things. It takes time to organise. But I have grown in confidence, and I do, you know, whether someone comes with me next year or whether it ends up being a solo event, I really don't mind. I'm completely up for both. I love the flexibility of being on my own. I love that, despite having a podcast, YouTube channel, and doing quite a lot of public stuff, public talking and public speaking, I really love my own company. So I'm absolutely fine with that as well. I hope that's given you a really good insight into the trip. I hope you've got some takeaways from my experiences I'd love to hear what you've got to say about those trips. You know, tell me about what you handled and, you know, where you went and what the pros and cons were. If you think I've said anything that you don't agree with, let me know on Instagram as well, because I'm going to do a post when this episode goes live. As you can hear, my voice is getting crackly because I've been presenting all day for my day job as well, so I'm pretty much out of energy for talking now, so I'm going to leave it there. I hope you enjoy the episode. There's going to be more episodes to come, as you can imagine. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Have a lovely week, and remember, if you get the opportunity to go for a drive, speak to your friends, hang out, it's good for your mental health, it's good for everything about you. I'm out. I'll speak to you next week. Take care for now. Bye bye.